You?
I'm good, mate.
You're a busy man. You must be one of the busiest politicians. I've seen you're always out there doing something, aren't you?
Yeah, it is quite intense. And I've got a job to do as well. And sometimes I have to do the housework as well, I was told the other day.
What a master.
I've loads to do.
Okay, right. Let's start right at the beginning. Let's start on national issues and a story that's right in the news today. This bill that we've just been given, £1.7 billion, it's come about because, if you haven't heard the news story already, it's come about because the way that they calculate the payments from each country into the pot, shall we say?
Yeah.
Our economy is smaller than Germany's and France's, and if you look at the graph, they're both growing. We've been growing. We've been dipping. They've been dipping, and it comes out that they've been overpaying, and we've been underpaying, and suddenly got a bill for £1.7 million. We're not the only one. Greece have got a bill as well. Greece has got a bill. Yeah. And we've been given a matter of days, really, to pay it. My question to you is that David Cameron is in Brussels at the moment trying to negotiate something about it, and lots of people saying we're not going to pay.
No.
Nigel Farage, this is right up his street.
He's having
a baby over it. but I've heard nothing from Miliband. What is Labour's stance on this?
Well, I've come to this one late. I've been out, as you say, I've been out a lot, and I've been out all morning in Nevermain talking to residents about the lights going out and the crime over in Basildon. But, well, as far as I can see, I mean, it's a little bit this is obviously a personal view because I haven't heard anyone's view. Paying a bill of that size within a few weeks is probably something we might struggle with. So, I mean, you know, that needs to be looked at. But the overarching issue is, why do we think we're exempt from paying things and being part of... We're all in a club together, and we seem to want to set ourselves out as something special and something different from the other 27 nations that are in the EU. So if we've got a bill to pay, if it's something that's been backdated and it's hit us all at once, then hopefully we'll be able to spread out the payments like you would if you had a massive bill come indoors. But... it just playing to UKIP's hands, doesn't it?
Outrageous and terrible, and the country wants a debate. I mean, let's go on to that then. Should we have a debate? Should we be in Europe at all?
Well, for me, we should. We should. We far benefit from being part of the European Union, and we do benefit from people from the EU coming to work and pay their taxes over here as well, and it cuts both ways. We always hear the argument about too many people coming in, but no one seems to have a problem with an equal amount of Brits going out as well. So when we'll be having that debate, no doubt, for the next 6 months, but when we do, let's make it balanced and fair.
So will Labour fight the next election saying that you're in favour of an EU referendum or no referendum, just leave things as they are?
Well, we said not to leave things as they are, but we said we're not supporting the call for a referendum unless there is a further transfer of powers to the EU. But what we want to do is be inside and fight our corner from within. We don't want to come out and pull up the drawbridge. There's lots of, you know, we're working with other countries, and it's this, we seem to think we're going to have exclusive membership that's sort of got, you know, gold star or platinum card, where all the other countries have to just make do with their normal Barclay card. You know, we've
other
got
credit cards are available.
Well, whatever card. You know, I'm not advertising for Barclays, but look, we're a great country. We've got a lot to offer the world, but we are much better within the group of mainly like-minded people and pooling our resources and being able to compete on the stage against China and against America and against Russia. You know, Europe is a big, you know, we're a contender, aren't we? But if we pull out, like, I'm so glad that the Scots didn't pull out of the UK, because that's the same issue on a smaller scale, isn't it? Who wants to get smaller in the world? Why don't we want to get bigger and just, you know, be part of something?
One criticism, though, is that Germany and France didn't put in as many austerity measures as we did, and we're now paying the price for putting in such strict austerity measures.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we said that from the start, didn't we? It's too far, too fast, and it's a false economy. The what they're saying at the moment, you know, unemployment's down, but that's built on figures of 0 hours contracts and loads more people becoming self-employed. I mean, the stats there have gone through the roof, haven't they? It's a shaky economy, and people aren't better off. We know wages, you know, I work in the voluntary sector. Our wages have been frozen and they've gone up by 1% this year. Everything else is going up far way above that. So we're all getting worse off. It's not working. It's not working for
people.
Well,
I was going to come on to that. I mean, I worked in the public sector for 30-odd years. I worked in the private sector for the last couple of years. People where I work at the moment, they haven't had a pay rise for 9 years in the private sector, and that seems now quite common. And if you don't like it, well, there's the door.
Exactly. That seems the attitude. Terms and conditions are being eroded, aren't they?
Exactly, and disappointingly, I was reading yesterday that the long-running fire brigade dispute about pensions, they had a meeting a month ago where the pension secretary for the fire service more or less said, well, yeah, we'll move on that. We'll move on that point and move on that point. And then yesterday,
No.
Back exactly where they were, you know, a year ago. And so it looks like there's going to be another massive industrial problem. You know, we've had nurses go on strike, midwives go on strike.
Yeah, for the first time ever. You know, it's because... And, you know, these people do not go on strike lightly. I think the midwives never been on strike before because it has got so bad. Mm. You know, people have got to stand up for themselves and for each other because we're lining the pockets of the rich and famous, aren't we? It's, you know, the tax cut for millionaires, up in arms about things like the mansion tax for people living in...
I listened to Ed Balls yesterday talking on the mansion tax, and my impression at the end of the piece was confusion, really, because I don't think the Labour Party have really done their homework on what this mansion tax is going to be, because there seems to be so many exceptions. It's very complicated. It's based on if your house is over 2 million, you're going to pay 1%. If your house is 20 million...
Yeah, sort of banded amounts above.
But then they bought in the cases where if somebody bought their house in 1960 for $10,000, it's now worth $4 million, and they've done, you know, their wages haven't changed at all. They're still relatively poor people there.
They might be retired and not have a big income. That's true. And there's things in place, isn't there, for people that are not earning a high amount and can't afford to pay that for that to be taken into account sort of further down the line. But generally speaking, it's got to be a good idea that those that are better off and living in the bigger houses and you know haven't got the problem that the rest of us have got do make more of a contribution. That's progressive taxation, isn't it? That's what, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they would also argue, though, that they're the people who never use the services you're asking them to pay for. They never call a fire engine out. They never need the police.
They would if they had a fire, and they would use the NHS if they was ill. And hopefully, they've got they might not, but they've got family and you know, grandkids probably that use schools and services. That's sort of isolating yourself from the rest of the community, isn't it? That's what Pickle's done with his, you know, planning permission thing where you can now build massive extensions in the garden. Like, your neighbours wouldn't get a bit upset about that. He didn't really think that people were connected in that way, you know. It's all every man for himself or woman, isn't it?
And you're proposing this mansion tax really to fund the NHS?
Yeah, part of the extra $1.5 billion a year that we're going to put in if we get into power, along with a tobacco tax as well. And
somebody appealed yesterday, and I can't tell you who it was, to do not reform the NHS anymore. We don't need any more managers. And I think that is the layman's opinion of the NHS. There are so many managers. Now, I don't know if that... I'm not an expert on this, but I don't know if that makes the NHS more efficient, having all these so many more management and less doctors or nurses. Or what? I don't know what the answer is.
Well, you need more. We need more people on the front line, don't we? That's the bottom line. Is we need more GPs, and we need a lot more prevention as well, don't we? We need to make sure that people don't go to A&E because they can't see their GP within a couple of days, or over a week in a lot of cases, and make sure that where we can, we relieve the pressures that are on the NHS that can be avoided by good prevention, helping people to stay at home. And I'm really excited about the bringing together of social care with the National Health Service and mental health services, and trying to look at the whole thing in the round, because if we invest more money in the social care side of things, helping the elderly to stay at home by making adaptations and things like that, we are going to prevent people having to go on A&E. And my dad spent far longer away before he died in hospital because they didn't have the facilities for him to sort of move on from that position while he still needed a bit of support. So we don't want people blocking beds in hospitals when, you know, that the figures are going up, aren't they, for people that need hospital services. So
And another, just finally, another NHS-related story, the proposition that doctors are paid £55 for diagnosing dementia. I mean, there are no poor doctors, I'm sure. Why do we need to give the doctor £55 more?
Yeah, I mean, when you hear the argument, I mean, I don't think that is the way we should be going. When you hear the argument about it's something that is underdiagnosed and we must do better, but we must do better without paying people an extra £55. It's like someone said, it's akin to going in to have your car serviced and then paying an extra 55 quid at the end to have your wheels put back on. You would expect that to be the function of the doctor to be able to diagnose. And if there's a difficulty in diagnosis, you're going to put money in, you put it in training and the, you know, the equipment or whatever you need to diagnose it. Don't just give people £55 to diagnose something that they probably should be coming across anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We haven't spoken since the Labour conference. I just wanted to know what your thoughts are on the Labour conference. The headlines from it, unfortunately, was Mr Miliband forgetting. That's all that really came out of it as far as the media were concerned. They've jumped on that story.
They do tend to do that, don't they?
Yeah,
jump,
I know.
Jump on one error. It's a bacon sandwich syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I interviewed Ed Miliband 6 weeks ago. We were at the same event in Purfleet. Ed Miliband is an intelligent, very, very clever guy. But unfortunately, in the public perception, he's got this. I always go back to the story of my grandmother, who would vote for Mr Heath because he was a much nicer man, in her opinion, than Mr Wilson, regardless of their politics. And I think, sadly and wrongly, that Labour have got a problem this time with Ed Miliband.
Yeah, and it is sadly and wrongly, isn't it? That's the bottom line. And
yeah, it is.
You know, it comes up very rarely on the doorstep. It does on the odd occasion, and you probably, you know, you normally think, well, maybe you're not inclined to be thinking our way anyway, because, you know, I'll say to people, please do not make your mind up on the photo. You know, the 50 photos are taken of someone taking a bite out of a sandwich.
Yeah.
One of them's going to be a howler.
Exactly.
And if you're going to use that one, then that's just bias reporting.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so please, you know, see through, look at the policies. The manifestos are coming out soon, and see what we want to do with the NHS, with education. And judge us on that. Don't. Yeah, I know it's a bit. There's going to be TV debates, and I've said in the past, haven't I, Mike? When you meet Ed Miliband, very sincere. He cares about people. That comes across when you meet him in a group or a one to one. We've got to get that across on telly. But we do need help from the media and the press to make sure that we do get a fair crack, because it is sort of open season. On, you know, like he said, he's made the Wallace and Gromit jokes himself. You know.
Yeah.
They are amusing, but let's not.
And, you know, it's happened before with Neil Kinnock, you know, the last person to leave the country.
He fell over on the beach, didn't he?
Yeah.
It never left him, did it?
Okay, but do you think, probably you're not going to answer this, do you think Labour should change their leader?
No, definitely not.
You're quite happy that Ed Miliband
it's not just the leader, is it? There's a team, and there's a really good team around, and there's great. You know, I've been out with some of our members this morning. There's a real positive feeling, especially with what's going. You know, you'd really spend a lot of time trying to work out the permutations of how the elections are going to go, and I don't think anyone's going to be able to predict anything, especially in our part of the country. But it is positive, and we need to, I really enjoyed, you know, you said about the conference. I really enjoyed the conference, and I was at that speech, and I thought it was great, and I thought he touched a lot of bases, and he got through, you know, a lot of really, you know, strong and sincere points. But you walk out and then you see, oh, you know, if we hadn't released the manuscripts, people wouldn't have known, would they? When you speak for over an hour, that was an impressive feat. And it does mean it. He missed a little bit out.
See for Basel and South East Essex. Mike, before we want to talk about stuff more local, UKIP, you and I were in this studio just before, well, the night of the last local elections, and I interviewed the UKIP candidates, etc. Locally, to be honest, I didn't have a clue. They had no real policies. But nationally, we've got the by-election coming up next week. Lots of spectators are saying that they're going to do very, very well. They've already just won the Clacton one. what's your outlook on UKIP? Are you worried? Are you worried that the vote that Labour voters might vote UKIP, or are you more confident that Tory voters might vote UKIP and that will do you well? I mean, that's what the Tories are worried about, aren't they? Because they're thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got a lot. They've got a real lot to worry about. I think. I mean, we do take the threat seriously. I think there will be some Labour vote that goes to UKIP, and that's been sort of proved already, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the locals as well. But it is much more of a Conservative problem than a Labour problem. I mean, next week's a real test, isn't it? Because if UKIP do win that one, in what was it on their list? Sort of hundreds down their list, wouldn't it, of winnable seats? And it'll be a disaster for the Conservatives. We know that in South Essex there's strong support for UKIP, but it seems to be imploding now. Already, they've deselected their candidate in my constituency.
Yeah, that was
South Essex East Farrock, Kerry Smith.
Kerry Smith. Yeah,
which was a strange decision, really. I mean, we don't know what went on behind closed doors, because something's obviously happened. He's a local councillor and a county councillor as well, and he'd been their candidate for the last couple of years since I've been selected. He'd been their candidate, so to drop him and then to see the Belted and Echo. So someone from UKIP saying that he was they set the bar really high for Westminster, so it's not Kerry's time yet because he's not ready. I thought, they set the bar high for Westminster. They've got a Tory turncoat who's jumped ship. They've got another one on the way, maybe, but hardly. Yeah. Who's coming to South Basildon and East Thurrock? We got might have the Hamiltons knocking on the door at this rate, and bring it on. Bring it on. I think the Conservatives are getting in a real spin over it, and I can't see a lot of difference now between voting UKIP and Conservative. You're getting a similar lot of policies, and you're getting the same representatives now as well. So we'll see. I wouldn't envisage that, although we're taking it seriously, I'm running a positive campaign about Europe especially, but other things as well. I don't want to get pulled into the in-out referendum that's not on.
You and the Tories aren't that far apart, really, on Europe, are you? You're both, adamant.
Well, Cameron, he started. We weren't maybe at the start of the Parliament when Cameron was saying he'd campaign to stay in if there was a referendum, but now he's definitely wobbling, isn't he? And it's more likely to appease his right-wing / UKIP sort of membership, which he has got, that he's probably.
Well, I'm going to read out the headlines in a minute. And the first headline is David Cameron has angrily refused to pay the extra £1.7 billion.
That's it. Well, that's, and I heard Farage earlier saying, if it was me, I wouldn't pay it. So, you know, there's nothing between them, is there, on that? It's made for, if it wasn't so serious, it'll be, the election's going to be really interesting, and it's going to be, how it's all going to pan out, we don't know, and if you're into that sort of thing. But actually, I am worried that they will make more inroads than we think, and that's what we're fighting against. I don't want to live in a country that's going down the nationalist road.
I know you're worried also that you've got a leader in Farage who is really, I would say, in the same sort of same as Boris Johnson, really, who are popular people. They've been on Have I Got News For You. They're a bit clownish, You never see a picture of Farage unsmiling, do you? He's laughing his head off in every picture.
That is true, and he's got that presence, the TV love him, don't they? But I really do hope that like we said before about the media and the TV, it's proportionate, because if next March and April he's on 24/7, that will affect a lot of voters who do not think about, but they've got lives to lead, and like most normal people don't really think about elections till a bit nearer the time. He will pick up votes because he's getting disproportionate amount of coverage. But they've got a message, but someone compared Farage the other day to Oswald Mosley and what happened in the 1930s.
Well, with the black shirts,
a nationalistic, someone said on Question Time, quite charismatic, confident in what their message, so they always sound like they believe in what they're saying, and it attracts people from the far right, and before you know it, we're on a road that where we are excluding people. Their poster campaigns, their logo, you know, they're candidates who talk about bongo, bongo land and ting-tongs. It's all there. If we look back, if we let UKIP in and look back on the early 20th century and say, didn't we see this coming? You know, we need to stop it now. It is a serious thing.
But are there, after these election results, have you as a party and the Tories as well looked at UKIP's policies and gone, actually, that isn't a bad idea, and that's why people are warming to them? Are you getting that people... When you knock on people's doors, are people saying to you, no, I'm not voting Labour, you've had your chance over the last 50 years, Tories never voted Tory, Liberals dead in the water, I'm going to give UKIP a chance?
Well, the last bit, really. They say they're giving UKIP a chance because they are fed up with the three main parties as what they see at Westminster. I don't shy away from that view because I'm getting in there. I want to make some changes myself. You know, I'm not happy with politicians if they think they've got a cosy life in Westminster and they're not, you know, not representing the people they should be. Number one job has got to be that you represent the people that voted for you. And I, you know, but I know there are differences. But when you say look at UKIP's policies, I mean, what are, get out of Europe, privatise the NHS, cut everyone's maternity, holiday pay, workers' right. You know, these are the things, pay to see your GP. So there are, when their manifesto comes out, if it's an honest manifesto, we'll be able to make the clear distinctions between what you get with Labour, what you get with the Tories, what you get with UKIP. But I can understand people seeing it when they watch PMQs, they're all baying, you know, all the time. It's not great, is it? Although, you know, I do agree, we have that in Brentwood, you know, you do need a strong opposition and a strong administration. But to an extent, but actually, you've got the policies have got to come through and win the day, hopefully.
Okay, back in a moment, let's catch up with the latest news headlines. Studio joining me this afternoon. Mike, one other thing just nationally I wanted to... just going back to the mansion tax and Ed Balls. Ed said something that quite concerned me. He was blaming the mess on the Conservatives of the coalition, and the coalition have been blaming their everything on the Labour mess from the last time you were in power.
Economy in general?
Oh, everything. Surely we're past the blame factor now. You can't keep blaming the people before you. I mean, if Labour is saying it's all the coalition's fault, and the coalition's saying, well, we're repairing what the damage Labour did before, you know, it's just a... People are sick of it.
Yeah, well, we do want to, you know, we're in the future business, aren't we? We're making life better for people, hopefully. But I think, you know, when the coalition came into power, it was all about Labour's mess and, you know... I can hear myself thinking it, global banking crisis, blah, blah, blah. You know, there were things that happened globally that affected that. They've been in power for over 4 years now. You can't just keep harping back to Labour's time in government. There was decisions made that are now coming to fruition, the cuts in local government grants and things like that, bedroom tax, that are causing some real pain. That wasn't Labour's fault. This is, you know, they've got to stand on their own track record now.
Yeah, I think we're past on the blame me culture now.
That's it. Voting for, you know, do you want more of the same or do you want something new for the future? And I know I want something new.
Okay. All right. So what when you are on the doorstep, what are people telling you? What are they asking? What's their grievances at the moment? What are they unhappy about?
Well, at the moment, as I said earlier, we was out this morning in Nethermain, in an area that was highlighted last week in the Basildon Echo as having a real spate of car crimes and a couple of burglaries as well, happening after midnight when the lights go out. And certain areas of the county are in total darkness. Really, really, people are really concerned now. We knew it was obvious. I mean, what's going to happen when you create darkness at night for, you know, people? And the people want the lights back on. In some areas of the county, they've been turned back on with pressure from local councils. In Brentwood, the Conservative administration would not put up a fight, if you like, to Essex. That's a county decision, they'd say, and didn't really do anything about it. In Basildon, I'm really delighted the Labour group have been petitioning. 500-plus signatures already last week. As soon as there's an incident in a specific area, the online petition on our Labour website gets 200 hits in the last couple of days because people are saying, we do want the lights back on, and it's been a real disgrace. On a local level, that's one of the main issues. People are coming back to work from two in the morning. If you can't afford to drive or get a taxi, you're walking. Public transport's not about. dangerous. There have been assaults on people.
So just wind back a bit there. You said the last administration in Brentwood didn't do anything about it. They said it's an Essex issue. But they're not in power anymore. You are, or the coalition is. So what are you going to do? What are you doing in Brentwood about it?
Yeah, well, we're clear. We're making representation to Essex County Council. We have got our county councillors. We've got two Lib Dems, two Tories, so we're making sure, I know that from the Accord side, that the Lib Dem county councillors are speaking up for against the lights going out at County Hall. It is a county decision, but things change when people speak up. That's what it's all about, isn't it? So Tories are running the show at County Hall. They're not having it. When the options at other areas have gone down, LED, alternate lighting, not turning them off at all. Why, if you've got to save money, why do you pick on an area that's at, it's going to, again, hammer the more vulnerable, the people that haven't got their own transport and the people that have to work into the early hours that have got unsociable jobs because they're doing two or three jobs. No brainer.
Okay. What else have people been saying?
Today that was the focus. That was the focus today, and we've been leafleting people. We've got things like local cuts to the hot meals again. That's been coming up. Someone the other day we were talking about meals for the elderly at the George Heard Centre and places like that in Basildon that the council cut. Why cut? Something that's cost. Tens of thousands of pounds when you're spending money or hundreds of thousands of pounds on counting how much grass you've got in the area because you want to contract out the maintenance for all the green spaces. They make some real terrible decisions. A lot of the doorstep at the moment has been about UKIP and the 11 new councillors that were elected and made 12 in total. What they're not doing, because people are not seeing their UKIP councillors. There was a meeting in Pitsey last night. I was speaking to a local resident today about that meeting. There was only Labour representation there. A few of the local Labour councillors and a couple of the county councillors were there listening to people's concerns. Pitsey, always an issue around fly tipping and the condition of the pavements, the trees that are causing damage to the properties, and all the estates in the Pitsey area are neglected by the local council. People are paying their council tax, and they're not getting the services that you'd expect people to get that they are getting in Billericay and Wickford and places like that, where there might be a few Conservative representatives in the area. So it's not a level playing field, Mike. The general feeling is it's not a level playing field, and people are feeling like they're being dumped on, and literally sometimes with the fly tipping, because once you get one area where there's fly tipping, it doesn't get dealt with. People think, oh, we can, they stick it all there, and it's a ever decreasing circle, isn't it? So, Keep Pitsey Tidy petition's been a real popular issue with people. NHS, even on a local level, I'm amazed really, because you hear some really good stories about Basildon Hospital, but that's always matched with some real disasters for people, where people have it seems to be very hit and miss. So
I just think it's unfair in some ways, and Queen's as well comes in for so much criticism, but they seem to forget that they've closed so many hospitals around, and Queen's, especially the A&E department, is under incredible pressure. I was in there fairly recently with my mother, and a woman came in with a young child, a 13-14 year old, and said the child was constipated. You think, well, why are you at A&E? The best, go to your doctor,
Well, if they can get into their doctor, that's the thing
Or just do something, everybody gets... It's just wasting the resources of the NHS sometimes. Just one silly... Or somebody's coming and they've run out of paracetamol or something.
And they obviously don't want people doing that at their hospitals, but sometimes people are desperate, and our feeling about the NHS, it's not attacking the staff or the nurses or anybody that works in the NHS, works blooming hard. They're struggling, they're under pressure, like we said at the start. If you've got as many managers as frontline staff, we've got to change things, but it's more about bringing in the adult health with social care and making sure that we are preventative, because the bit we found out the other day, didn't we? You know, 8 billion a year it's going to be, we need to find extra. We're not going to find that without doing some good preventative work. That doesn't mean cutting everything all the time, but we're not going to take a sledgehammer to the NHS or to education. Things need to change, but people are fed up with, you know, there was top-down reorganisation, the NHS was a promise that Cameron said he wouldn't do. Straight away.
Absolutely.
They're on it.
So. Recently, this week, our Mike Porter's Drive Time programme, Louise McKinley was in the studio, and a point she made quite strongly on several occasions was that Barry has made a lot of promises and statements that are attention headline-grabbing, you know, in the local press and on here, but nothing's actually happened. It's 5 or 6 points that he's made on various projects that he's done it, and nothing's actually happened, and no money's been spent, or nothing's actually been done.
That's so frustrating to hear. I missed the interview. I find the Conservatives, the two or three at the top of the Conservative group that totally hypocritical and ignorant of what is going on, to be honest. I mean, there is a lot going on. When we formed the Accord and actually had a look at what hadn't been done over the last 5 years, it was, you know, the bottom drawer was stuffed full of stuff that's been put on hold, and we are addressing it. We are addressing the town hall. We actually delivered on a town hall project that was, again, put on the back burner. We saved the town hall, we got a company in to... we tendered out for people to invest in the town hall and create business space, as well as the public's keeping their public services at the town hall. That was all ready to go 2+ years ago, and it was put in the bottom drawer by the Conservative administration. So it's come out, we've dusted it down, we've met with the group that luckily are still around, and that'll be happening soon. The William Hunter Way issue... No.
I get a shiver down my back. I know. What
a waste of 10 years, you know. And again, and that had to go back to square one because there wasn't a consultation with the residents. We've had over 4,000 returns to date, and it's still running, the William Hunter Way consultation. That will take time to go through. But what a fantastic... How many responses did they get before? 0, because they never did one. And you know, these...
What's coming out top of the list, though? What do people actually want in William Hunter Way? Do they want the cinema? Do they want bigger shops? What do they want?
Well, I haven't seen all the responses. They're coming in. We've been told, because there's online petition, everyone got one through their door. So they're collating all the stuff. But like I say, 4,000, they've got a lot to get through. I hope it's something along... I hope there's some decent housing for people, some smaller properties. I'd love... You know, and it's my totally personal... dream, as someone who grew up in Brentwood, I loved the open air swimming pool in the Lido. I'd love to see something like that for Brentwood families that live in the area and play a space for people to relax as well as shop, because you know the mentality of the Conservatives in Brentwood is stack it high in Brentwood, business, cars, you know, it's their sort of powerhouse, isn't it, for the borough. It brings in a lot of revenue in car parking and things like that. We've got to Brentwood is a shared space with local residents, and we've got to make sure that the families that come to Brentwood and the people that want to come up for, you know, lunch and sit in the park for a little while. But it's so hip. I mean, one Tory councillor on Wednesday night was ejected from the chamber by the mayor because they were just so arrogantly, you know, want to fight all the time. And to hear, we had the big debate on Wednesday was about whether we go to all out elections every 4 years rather than the year-on-year.
Yeah, that's
year.
Something I'm actually in favour of. But,
me too, on. And I've thought about it a lot. And the case is there for, for general...
Well, saving money for a start.
Well, that was for some reason, that was a contentious point because I'd said in when I spoke, one of the reasons was that it'll save a lot of money. In times, austere times, you've got to make savings. You can make a lot of savings. I think it's up to 200 grand over one cycle. And the Conservatives wouldn't have it. They said it's bad for democracy. Money shouldn't come into it. As soon as they'd said, you know, and this is the hypocrisy, as soon as they said that, two councillors got up and explained to them where they'd said they wanted to cut the number of councillors to save money. So, you know, you think, why are you disagreeing with things for... for disagreement's sake. But the actual, the general election, the county elections, the Euro elections, they're all, everyone's all out at the same time. It's ridiculous that every year we have to sort of down tools as councillors and go on the campaign trail.
Well, exactly, exactly.
What a waste of time that is every year. And we don't need elections every year to keep us on our toes, which was one of Louise's comments. You know,
if listeners don't ask what we're talking about the fact that every 2 years there's an election for the local councillors, and this happens in other councils or up and down the country, or other councils will have just one election every 4 years. The only argument against having the once every 4 years elections is that, for example, if you had you had 30 Tories and 10 Labour in a council, they could all lose their seats, and you could have 40 new UKIP or Liberal Conservative, and none of them got any experience whatsoever.
Exactly. And that issue, they're party political issues, really. I mean, for the Labour Party, for the Conservatives, for the Lib Dems, who've got a lot less members than we've got, it'll be difficult to, not difficult or impossible, but you've got to find 37 candidates in one go rather than the 12 or 13 that are up every year. So that's a problem for the parties, and we've all thought about that one. That shouldn't be an issue for the public. That's about the political parties. But we're up every 4 years anyway. The argument, you can get rid of a councillor after a year, you can't, because I would have been up next year if I was standing. I was elected in 2011, so you've got 4 years of me, like it or not, regardless of whether you have all-out elections or not. But on a bad year, if it's next year, that would be after the general election, depending on who's in power. It might be bad locally. The next one, if it was 2016, 2020, it'd be a general election. But again, it's a level playing field, because all parties could either get wiped out or win. In a 20-year cycle, it's probably going to be the same for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're going to miss Brentwood politics as well when you... if you're successful...
Hopefully. If I am.
I've got to ask you, if you're not successful, will you stay in Brentwood Council as a councillor?
I won't.
Or have you burnt your bridge?
Not through, any sort of intention, but next year was my year when I was supposed to be up for re-election.
Yeah.
And although legally you can stand, UKIP are doing MEP standing for MPs and all that. I wouldn't do that. I want to be a parliamentary candidate for South Basildon and East Thurrock. I am, and I want to win that election, and I'll be fighting that election. And I wouldn't want. I want to give another member of our Labour Party a chance to take my seat. If it was on a different year, maybe it wouldn't be an urgent issue.
Okay,
but
okay.
I will. Yeah, May the 8th next year, I'll either be MP for South Basildon and East Thurrock or I won't be a politician anymore.
Okay, Mike. I'm sure you'll, nearer the time, come in back to talk to us. You're very good at doing that. And also, you'll join in a debate, because I'll be inviting Stephen to come in and debate with you.
Love to, because he won't debate me at the moment, will he? So nearer the time.
I'm sure Stephen Metcalf, with a bit of persuasion, will do. If he doesn't come in, then that's very disappointing. And also, Keith Parker is due to come into the programme soon. Again, I'd like to get you both...
I love debating Keith.
Why not? It'll all be very pleasant. Always is. Mike, for today, anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks,
for coming
Mike.
In. And we'll see you very, very soon. And keep supporting Tottenham.
Cheers.
Okay, cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Did you know you can be...